Okay, so what a great tune that is. Unfortunately, several of the band members of that particular recording operation have passed on, and certainly going to miss them all. You, of course, you all of you know that this means it's time once again for a little fireside chats, and the topic today is going to be how I'm going to locate someone to assist me with my issues. So you're in a position where you've decided it's time for you to go see some help for whatever issue or issues that are in front of you, and you just really don't know where to start or how to get going or what kind of thing you should be looking for or whatever. And so hopefully this process will help demystify that a bit. A lot of times I get asked, you know, what are the differences in the mental health professions and which one should I go to? And should I use somebody, you know, I have one of these what I call mangled care insurance companies, more commonly known as managed care, or as I like to call them, pigs to the public hog trough. And again, that's no slam on the subscribers, that's a slam on the insurance companies, because their sole goal for most of their existence is to deny services and act like it's the fault of either the client or the therapist when they're really playing mind games with everybody. But that's another story. However, there certainly are times when a mangled care therapist can assist you with your issues. And I'm going to talk a little bit about going in network versus out of network. So it really sort of depends on what you're looking for. So let me start off by talking about the different types of folks that are available out there. Obviously, most people are familiar with psychiatrists, and they are physicians. They're trained exactly like physicians, but they have a specialty area in mental health, which they develop during their residency. Otherwise, they're trained exactly like a traditional physician. And then you have psychologists who do not have medical training, who are specialists in the mental health arena. What most people don't know, of course, is there are tons of different kinds of psychologists, and I don't mean good psychologists and bad psychologists, right? Yeah, I know. My jokes never get any better, so just, you know, hang in there, guys. What most people don't know is there are different types of psychology people based on your subspecialty. For example, counseling psychologists, or clinical psychologist, or educational psychologist, or research psychologist, or experimental psychologist, or police psychologist, or forensic psychologist, or whatever. And what all those things really mean is that most of those folks went to a program that either specializes in a certain aspect of psychology, or they specialized after their doctorate, so-called postdoctorate, by getting advanced degree certificates past their doctoral degree. So I'll talk about that in a second. The other issue is, you know, whether you should go to, because most people don't know that there are three types of degrees that you can have, that are doctoral degrees that you can have and become a licensed psychologist in many states. One of them is you can have a doctorate in education, right? Or you can have so for example, a lot of school psychologists and some counseling psychologists and education psychologists will have their doctorate in education. Some folks, well, they'll have an EdD, a doctorate in education. Some folks in the traditional programs that have been around that you see most psychology folks having is the PhD, the philosophy, the doctorate in philosophy. But since probably, I think, the late 70s, maybe early 80s, there's been a proliferation of the PsyD, so-called PsyD degree, which means Doctor of Psychology. And what differentiates those degrees is, in general, if you have an education doctorate, you're predominantly involved in either counseling psych or school psych or ed psych. So it's more of a school-based, educational-based kind of thing. Or if you're a counseling psychology person, typically what has differentiated a counseling psychologist from, let's say, clinical psychologist, in some cases is almost nothing, and in other cases it really depends on the type of clientele that those folks see. Traditionally, counseling psychologists have tended to see a lesser severe population of folks. Those folks are making more life changes, life adjustments, that sort of thing. as opposed to a clinical psychology person who typically sees much more chronic mental illness or really, you know, as I like to jokingly refer to them, and I mean no disrespect to anybody when I say this, very sick puppies. In some cases, psychotic puppies, folks who have schizophrenia, delusional disorder, or chronic mental illness like bipolar disorder or whatever, which are not unlike a lot of folks psychiatry folks see, except psychologists don't prescribe medication, psychiatrists prescribe medication. And there's this old joke, what's the difference in a psychologist and a psychiatrist? And the joke was about 20 years ago, it's probably a bigger differentiation now, but the joke used to be $50,000, right? It's probably more like $100,000 now, but implying how much they make a year difference in their income. Then you have people who have MSWs who are licensed social workers, and some folks have doctorate in social work. And traditionally, social work has done more of a societal, community, social, family unit kind of thing and done more placement stuff as opposed to therapy, although that's certainly changed in the last 20 to 30 years. Then, of course, you have Christian counselors. Those, and you can have a doctorate in Christian counseling. Most of them have master's degrees. Most social workers have master's degrees. And those are obviously for folks who want to get a more Christian-based type approach to their counseling. And if that's what you want, then you certainly want to find one of those folks. Then, of course, you have addictions counselors. And these are people who have either master's degrees in addiction counseling or doctorate degrees in addiction counseling, which is fairly new, or they are certified or licensed as such in their state. Some states certify addictions counselors, some states license addictions counselors. It really just sort of depends on whether you go through a state licensing board or whether you go through a more locally profession-controlled situation. The folks who are certified are more profession-controlled. The folks who are more licensed tend to be more state-controlled and caca state-controlled. Even though I am licensed, I consider that really not to be the purview of the state, frankly, and consider that to be another intrusion of the government on our public and private freedoms. But I digress into my own personal agendas here, so let me get back to the reality. So who you go see sort of depends on a number of factors. Part of that, obviously, is what you can afford, because obviously all these folks charge different rates. Master's level folks generally are cheaper than doctoral level folks. Well, that's kind of a duh, because the doctoral level folks generally have to go through more education. Psychiatrists are usually more expensive than psychologists or social workers or counselors. There's also LPCs, by the way. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to forget a class of folks that's called licensed professional counselors, and those folks can have a counseling degree, a counseling site degree, or a social work degree, and they've had enough coursework to sit for the licensing exam as LPCs, and those are typically master's level folks. So sorry, I didn't mean to slight anybody. So what happens is part of it depends on how much money you have. I mean, let's just be blunt. And part of it depends on the nature of your problem. Obviously, if you have a scenario that you absolutely 100% have to be on medication, you're going to have to go to some kind of physician to get that, because out of all of the aforementioned categories, the psychiatrists are the only folks of the mental health professionals who can prescribe medication at this juncture, with the exception of certain psychologists in certain states. There has been a movement in the last 20 years to allow certain clinical psychology folks who have the proper training and pass the pharmacy exam in order to be prescribing limited medications for mental disorders, so-called psychotropics from the Latin, which literally means mind-turning. And currently, I think there's 5 states in which that is the case, and you can check to see if your state allows that. Oregon, I think, is one of them. Louisiana is one of them. There's several others, and I'm sorry, I don't know them off the top of my head. So that really requires extra training in some sort of medical and or biochemical, neurological of the brain kind of thing for one to be able to sit for that exam. But barring that, most psychologists do not prescribe medication. Or any social worker or LPC or Christian counselors or addictions counselors. And I'm sorry, I also left out the marriage and family people. I'm I'm being very remiss tonight. My apologies to those folks. You can have an LMFT, a licensed marriage and family therapist. Those folks generally have a master's degree also, but you can have, there are some programs that offer doctorates in marriage and family. And obviously those folks focus more on marital and or family issues. So again, my apologies. I'm really not trying to slight anybody. I'm just being absent-minded. So it really sort of depends on the nature of your issue. Obviously, if you have more of a family-based scenario or you want to go to get specifically marital or couples counseling, relationship-type counseling, you're going to look for somebody who does that. And certainly LMFTs do that sort of thing. Certain social workers do that. Certain psychiatry folks do family or marital counseling. Psychologists, you'd really have to look at each person and his or her credentials. And so this really requires some of that nasty four-letter word work. Oh my God, he's not going back to that again. Yes, I'm sorry, I'm going back to that nasty, obscene four-letter word work again. You have to do your legwork in order to find your appropriate person to assist you with your issues. And I cannot overemphasize this enough. Do your homework. This podcast will hopefully get you on the right foot, at least to where to go and where to look for some answers. I obviously don't have a crystal ball, and the answer is not the same for everybody. But what I would say is the first step is figure out what you need. You know, do you absolutely need medication? Some folks have to be on some sort of biochemical assistance. And we've talked in the past, that can be in some cases that can be done holistically, more so-called alternative medicine using, you know, acupuncture, acupressure, massage, chiropractic, herbs, vitamins, protein, you know, changing your dietary habits and eating habits and cutting sugar out. And certainly if you can do that, that's my bias and preference, because, you know, you just don't know what long-term medication is going to do for the body. And some folks have to have that, and I understand that. And if you do, then, you know, you would be foolish not to engage in that. But if you can help avoid it, I really strongly recommend that you look into changing lifestyle habits as opposed to sticking pills for your solving all your problems, which we in our current society seem to be very famous for doing. At any rate, so that's sort of step one. So if you do need medication, make sure that you go to somebody who is a specialist in that area. You don't just go to some garden variety physician or even garden variety psychiatrist. Make sure that the psychiatric person that you consult with has expertise and training in your disorder of specialty. So let's say mood disorders, depression, bipolar disorder, is an anxiety disorder person or has specialty training in that, is an ADHD person, has specialty training in that, or schizophrenia or whatever. Make sure, and that's true of any of these things, by the way, whether you're going in for marital counseling or post-traumatic stress disorder counseling or whatever, make darn sure that the persons that you contact have training and ask them that directly. And most of these folks aren't going to talk to you, but you can talk to their office manager or their nurse practitioner assistant or whatever. If the clinician himself or herself will call you back, so much the better. That's always a brownie point in my book. So folks take enough time out of their schedule and interest in their patient population to call them back and speak with them for 5 or 10 minutes. That's always woohoo for them. So find somebody who does what you need them to do, that practices in the area, that has training and expertise. When you talk to their manager, office manager, nurse practitioner, whatever, or if you, as I said, if you're lucky enough to talk to the clinician herself or himself, ask them, you know, how many of these folks do you see? How many have you seen? Do you have a specialty training? Do you have postdoctoral or postmaster certifications in these areas? You know, these are not questions that are insulting or rude. These are things you need to know. Be proactive. Don't hesitate asking questions. That's not you being nosy and rude. That's you being proactive and self-enhancing, okay? And you heard it here first. When you're looking for these folks, you know, you can certainly look in the phone book under mental health counselors or counselors or psychiatrists or social workers or whatever. Many state organizations have referral lists, so you can call, you know, your psychology organization or your social work organization or your psychiatric organization. And many of those folks in the states will have a list of providers that are listed according to specialty areas and in some cases geographic areas. So if you're in the state of Illinois, let's say, you can call up and say, hey, who, I live in Carbondale, who's in Carbondale that's really good? And you can, you know, call the state organization, the state psychiatric or state psychological or state social work organization, and find out, you know, who's on their list, or do they have any referrals, or do they have people near the Carbondale area who are specialists in addictions or specialists in family therapy or whatever. Get on the web. That's a great tool nowadays. There's a lot of folks have websites, including yours truly, but a lot of folks have web presences. Look at the web presences. Do a compare and contrast. Don't be afraid to look at credentials and ask questions. You can never be too careful. This is your life we're talking about, or your son or daughter's life, or your husband's or wife or partners or parents or whatever. You know, this is important stuff. Be proactive. Be diligent. Do that four-letter word work before you walk in. Right. So if you call the office to talk, if you narrowed it down, you've done your homework and you've narrowed it down. Right. Call them and talk to them or talk to their assistant and ask what kind of stuff they do. Don't be afraid to ask what their rates are. Don't be afraid to ask what their out of office policies are. Some folks, including yours truly, still do house calls. That's much rarer today, and you almost will never find that. But ask them what their policies are. Ask them what their office hours are. Do they see folks in the evening? Do they see folks on the weekend? Right. Due to my sleep disorder, for example, I never see anybody before 3 in the afternoon because I'm just not coherent before 3. I mean, I'm you know, you wouldn't want to see me, trust me. I also do house calls. I also work on the weekends. So, you know, you need to ask those kind of questions. You know, ask them if they take, if you have an insurance and you want to use your insurance, ask them if they're an in-network provider that or an out-of-network provider. By the way, that's another place you can potentially get referrals. If you're wanting to use somebody in your network or you want to see who's in your network to compare to see if they're on the list of people you've decided through your other work that you want to see, go look in your book. Call the number that's on the back of your card. Most of you guys and gals got a card when you signed up for the insurance plan that you're on. They have an 800 number. Call and ask if Dr. Joe Blow or Dr. Jolene Smith is on there, right? And if they're not on there, find out what kind of plan you have. Some insurance companies will allow you to see people that are outside of their network. They may not pay quite as much as if they're in the network, but they'll still pay something, right? General rule of thumb is if you have what's called a PPO plan, a preferred provider organization plan, they'll pay for out-of-network folks. People with HMOs, health maintenance plans, typically will not, right? But call your insurance person and ask them what they are. Ask them what their out-of-network rates are. Right? And don't be afraid. And if they won't give you an answer, go up the food chain. Again, you're not being rude. You're being proactive. You paid for this daggum insurance. And if you plan to use it or thinking about using or want to use it, or you know, you're just in a financial position where you have to use it, okay? And let's face it, there's certain folks out there that have to go to somebody. They don't have extra income to be spending on folks like myself. And I get that. And if you're one of those folks, I feel real bad for you. But if you're one of those folks, I get it. You know, money's tight. Find out what your insurance company's policy is. Some places will give you exceptions if you have a very unusual disorder or set of disorders that not a lot of specialists are do in your area. Some insurance companies will grant you an exclusion, right? Be sure and get everything in writing, by the way. And when you talk to these people on the phone, get names, get extensions, document your phone call, take copious notes of your phone call. I have had insurance companies deny they said things to people on the phone. And I was there and heard some of them that just out and out lied to the prescriber. So insurance companies will lie to you just like anybody else will. And I'm not bashing insurance companies per se, but never forget insurance companies are made out of people. They're manned and womaned by people, and people aren't always honest, okay? And some insurance companies are better than others, and I don't want to name any names, but suffice to say that there are some insurance companies I've had experience with that are much more honest than others. And, you know, if you have one of those folks that aren't that great, I feel sorry for you, but you need to find that out. You need to find out what's going on. Ask them. If they won't tell you, move up the food chain till they will tell you. If you have reason to suspect you have a certain disorder, ask if they reimburse for that disorder. Some plans don't cover certain disorders. Believe it or not, some plans, if you get diagnosed with a certain disorder, will disqualify you from any future services. Now, as the insurance landscape is changing with what's been jokingly called Obamacare and all this other forms of government foolishness, in my personal opinion, that may change. And I don't keep up with that stuff because I'm not an in-network provider for anybody, because I didn't want some son of a biscuit eater telling me how to do therapy and how many sessions I could do and what I couldn't do and what kind of testing I could and couldn't do, because most insurance plans, if you're one of their quote-unquote special in-network providers, they basically dictate what the hell you do and don't do. And while they say, oh, we don't tell you what you can and can't do, they just won't pay for it, and you can't charge your person for it because you sign a contract with them to accept what they call accept assignment, which means you accept whatever fees they want to pay. And Medicare and Medicaid is the same way, which is why I don't do them either. I don't do any what I call pigs to the public hog trough. And again, I'm not slamming people, I'm slamming insurance policies. I just have no use for that crap, right? Which is why I'm not an in-network provider for anybody. Having said that, there are plans who'll pay for services for folks that I provide and people like me who aren't in-network providers. And there's a lot, and most of your real good clinicians won't be in-network providers. Because ask yourself this, right? Why would you be an in-network provider? They pay you anywhere from two-thirds to half of what you should be getting. And they're, you know, raison d'etre for that, their bullshit excuse for that, is that they say, well, we're going to send you a shitload of people. Yeah, but you also have to do a shitload of phone calls and paperwork, and please, 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 can I see these people? And if you don't fill out the forms exactly right and don't dot the I's and cross the T's and sign all the forms in exactly the place they want you to, they kick them back and they refuse to pay you, and you're just shit out of luck. And I don't have time for bullshit, and I don't have time for minutia and paperwork and busy work that serves no purpose except to justify somebody's paper shuffling job. So I didn't sign up for that shit. I'm a therapist. That's what I do. Or a tester, or, you know, an evaluator or whatever. I don't do paperwork. Didn't sign up for that crap. Didn't want to do it. I'd have been an accountant if I'd have wanted to do that crap. Okay. So most of your good clinicians aren't going to whore themselves out for less money and then fill a shitload of paperwork out. And by the time they get finished filling all the paperwork out, they've ended up making $30 an hour, right, because of all the headaches and stuff they have to do. And by the way, the insurance companies will try to convince you that that's the UCR. That stands for usual and customary rate. Well, let me tell you how they get their version of the usual and customary rate. They poll every son of a biscuit eater who picks up the phone for the local hospital making $7.50 an hour to the people who are making $250 an hour, and then they average everybody's income together. And as you can imagine, there's a lot more people on the lower end of that than there are on the higher end. And so by the time they get finished doing the averaging, you know, they come up with some number that is definitely not the usual and customary rate. It's anywhere from a third to a half of what the usual and customary rate is. And then they pay anywhere from 60 to 80% of that. Okay. So just to give you a real world example, let's say that your clinician charges $150 an hour, which is not outrageous. And let's say that your insurance company says that their version of the usual and customary rate is $100 an hour, and that they pay 80% of the UCR for in-network people and 70% for out-of-network people. I'm just making this up. So that means they'll pay 70, if you're an out-of-network person, that means they'll pay $70 on the 150, and you have to pony up the rest. Okay, so don't be fooled by that. Do the math. Make sure you can afford what you need to afford before you go in. Do some legwork. I cannot overemphasize that enough. The other thing I will say to you is, even if you narrow it down to four or five or two or three people that you like, and you know you can afford them, the price is right, or whatever, go in and meet them, right? Pay for an hour of their time and get a sense of them. Pick the most likely person and go in and see that person, right? And if you go in and you talk with that guy or gal and it doesn't click, go to the next person on the list and see how you feel about them, right? You're not, and this is not doctor shopping. You are trying to make an informed decision about who's going to match, you know, mesh with you and who's going to match up with you. Right. This is important, particularly if you're going to be in counseling for a long period of time. If you have a series of disorders, you have, like most of my clients have, 12 plus DSM disorders, you're going to be seeing me for a while. You don't want some schleppy person that you kind of half-ass feel okay with that's going to go coochie-coo, aren't you coot, and take your money and not do a damn thing, okay? Or somebody that you feel uncomfortable with. You can't be honest with somebody you feel uncomfortable with, right? Think about this as you picking out a mate or picking out a best friend working for a job that you're going to want to keep for a long period of time. You don't want a job that you hate. You don't want a shrink that you hate either, okay? Now, that doesn't mean you're always going to like what that person has to say, but you have to at least feel comfortable by that person. You have to at least feel like that person gives a flip about you above and beyond, you know, the paycheck you're paying them, and that this person has a sense of what he or she's talking about, that they know your condition, that they get what it is you're doing, and that they're doing the kinds of counseling that are demonstrated to work for your particular type of disorders, because we already know the research is in for a lot of these things. For example, if you have an anxiety disorder, if you have a depression disorder, cognitive behavioral therapy is known to work with those incredibly well. You get somebody who's using psychoanalytic or psychodynamic therapy for that stuff, go to the next frickin' person. Ask them what their therapy mode is. What's their theory of counseling? What's their therapy mode? What kind of therapy do they do? Right? Ask them that. And if they give you a term and you don't understand what it means, ask them what it means. And if they don't have time to explain it to you, look it up. Talk to friends and ask them, what the heck does that mean? Right? You need to be an informed consumer. That's what you're doing. You are not being rude. You're not being stupid. You're not being a pest. You're not doctor shopping needlessly. You are making an informed consent decision. Be informed and make darn sure you're not buying a pig in a poke. So let's say that you have done your legwork and you've identified a couple of folks, you called them up, and you just, and by some miracle, that the person himself or herself actually called you back. And by the way, I always call people back myself. I never have anybody in my office doing my work for me because I'm A, not a lazy bastard, and B, because I like what I do. And C, I want to make sure the person's right for me, so I'm going to ask them some questions on the phone to make sure that what they're wanting me for is something I can actually be useful to them, because if I can't, I'm going to refer them to people who do the things that I don't do, or who are better at a particular disorder or a group of disorders or an age group. You know, I don't deal with little kids, right? I'm kind of like W.C. Fields, and in case you guys don't know the famous quote by W.C. Fields, besides the "go away, you bother me," the other quote that he's famous for is, "anybody that hates kids and dogs can't be all bad." And my paraphrasing or rephrasing of that quote is, anybody that hates little dogs and little kids can't be all bad. Now, obviously, I'm joking, but I don't like little dogs. They're too damn yippy. Anything that looks like a football, I have no interest in. Little kids, I don't do, because the kind of therapy I do isn't efficacious for them. It's not correct for what their brain development level is. So regardless of their issue, I don't see little kids. I suck with little kids. And even though my license says I'm able to treat little kids, I'm not. And I don't see little kids because I'm not good with them. But I have a list of folks who are dynamite with little kids, and I have no problem referring out to folks, right? And every good clinician worth his or her salt should have such a list. If it's a disorder you don't do, or an age group you don't do, or a type of thing you don't do, some people aren't comfortable with gays, lesbians, some people aren't comfortable with religious freaks, some people aren't comfortable with Wiccans, pagans, whatever your deal is, right? Or addiction, a lot of people won't treat addiction disorders. Whatever their, you know, whatever their therapist bailiwick is, make sure that they have a list of people. If they don't do it, ask them, do they have somebody that they refer in the, you know, in their field? A lot of clinicians who are competent and ethical will have such a list, right? And that'll give you another jumping off point. But if, let's say that you call the person up, person actually calls you back, and you click for whatever reason, it feels right. You set up an appointment, you go in, and it's going to work. Well, you're home free, okay? Sometimes you're going to go in and it's going to work for a while, and then after 6 months or a year, things may get stale and you may need to transfer. You know, again, be communicative with your therapist. Be honest with your therapist. If a therapist says or does something that you feel uncomfortable with, ask them about it. Confront it about it. And remember, the word confrontation doesn't mean be a jerk. It means honestly address the issue. You can be extremely nice and honestly address the issue. Right? I confront patients all the time when they call me on the phone for the first time, and I'll say, I don't mean to pry or to be too nosy, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but could you give me a 5-minute overview of what it is you're calling me about to make sure that I'm going to be appropriate for you? And they'll say, oh yeah, well, you know, I have, my husband and I are having a communication problem, you know, or my husband's a drug addict and I'm getting tired of it. Now we want to know where to turn for help, and da-da-da, and how can I be helpful to him or whatever. Well, those are all things I do. If somebody calls me and says, I'm looking for somebody who can do counseling from a Christian perspective, I'm not the appropriate person for them, right? Now, I have a list of people who are, and I'll be glad to share that list with them. And I consider that an ethical responsibility of mine to have a list of people, or at least have a resource they can go to look for that sort of thing. You know, the name and number of a college that trains Christian counselors or whatever. That's really important for folks to know, right? Very, very, very important, right? So part of what guides your decision, obviously, is financial, who's in your network, who's not. But don't be penny wise and life foolish. If you have something easy, if you have a garden variety adjustment disorder, you know, your parents just uprooted you from Nome, Alaska to Chicago, Illinois, and you're in a culture shock and you're having an adjustment issue, pretty much any therapist worth his or her salt, both inside and outside of your network, and you heard it here first, you don't hear me say that very often, but any decent in-network therapist can do what they need to do and help you out, and you'll be fine. If you have tried therapy 4 or 5 times before and been unsuccessful, if you have a 2 or 3 or 4 or more disorders on your plate, right, that require somebody who's knowledgeable in a bunch of different areas, don't be stupid. Don't go to a in-network therapist because you're saving money, because you're not. You're saving pennies now, but you're screwing yourself and your life or your kid years down the road, and you're not going to get any help in all likelihood, right? It's ridiculous. Don't be penny wise and life foolish. A lot of people are that. And they, I can't afford it. Yes, you can. Sell your freaking condo in Puerto Vallarta. You can afford it. Right. Most of the people I see can well afford my services. Now, I'm not talking about people who really, really can't, and I'm not slamming poor people or people who are down on their luck or folks who can't afford the quote unquote luxury of therapy. I get it. But most of the folks that call my office can well afford me. They're just being stupid. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So please don't do that. Don't screw yourself in an attempt to save money. It's not worth it. Right? It's like buying crappy food and putting crappy food in your body. It's not worth it. Be good to your body. Your body's worth it, and so is your brain. Okay? So you find somebody, go in and talk with them. Get some idea of what they're like. Get a feel for them, right? In general, I always do at least minimal testing on somebody, and I do all my own testing. And that's another thing. If you're going into somebody and you need testing, whether it's an emotional test like an MMPI, or you need academic testing like for ADHD or LD, or you're trying to get certified gifted, or you're trying to get certified for Mensa and to be a Mensa member or whatever, ask the person, do they do their own testing? Do they do it themselves, or do they farm it out to some master's level flunky in their practice? And I'm not slamming master's level people because I have 2 master's degrees, okay? But I don't trust anybody to do my testing for me, because half the data I get from observing the person and how they approach the task of doing the tests. I cannot overemphasize that. The data I get from watching them approach the task and how they do and how they manipulate the visual data versus the auditory data versus the hands-on data is uber, uber, uber important. Good sources of data. I score my own testing and I write my own reports. I don't use report generators to do it like a lot of my colleagues do. Ask those questions. Do you do your own testing, or do you farm it out to other people in your practice, or do you farm it out to third-party people? Do you score and interpret your own tests in-house, or do you use a computer-generated scoring service? Do you write your own reports, or do you use a report generator? If they say they use a report generator, they don't do their own test. Well, I supervise other. Thank you, click, and call the next person. You're going to pay more money for it if the person does it himself or herself, but you get what you pay for. I cannot overemphasize that enough. It's like you buying a prefab house when you want a specialty house. You're buying prefab plans from Chuck U. Farley Builders versus you get an independent architect who's going to draw the spec plans to your exact specifications to match the lay of the land, the contour of the land, does a survey, make sure that your house isn't going to fall into the ocean or slide down the mountainside or fall in a sinkhole or whatever, uses top-notch plumbers. Yeah, you don't want a schlepper. This is your life. Never forget this. What you do now determines the rest of your mental health life. I cannot overemphasize that. You must find somebody who does at least cursory assessment. And if they say they don't do any testing, they just diagnose on intake, find somebody who does, who will do the testing. Because I don't give a flip who you are. None of us are God. None of us are Buddha, Allah, or the force, or we're just not. And I'm really freaking good at what I do, but I'm not God. That extra O in that word is real important, okay? I'm good. I'm not God. I can't diagnose by raising my hands and going, "Whoa, I'm getting psychic vibrations. Let me tell you what." Right? I'm sorry. I can't do that. I need some baseline testing. And anybody tells you they don't need testing, they're a liar, or they're a narcissist, or they're a fool. because most people don't know what they're really suffering for. They'll come in thinking they have depression. They'll come in thinking they have an addiction problem. And maybe they do have depression, and maybe they do have a drug problem. But they weren't born drug addicts. What caused you to use drugs in the first place, dude? Duh. Well, excuse me, ma'am. How'd you start becoming an alcoholic? Well, because I was born alcoholic. Wrong answer. You're an alcoholic because you're either depressed, ADHD, whatever. You got something else that caused the alcoholism. You need to know what caused you to drink. Otherwise, you're going to go back to drinking. Or you're going to substitute some other self-destructive behavior. Or you're going to, at the very least, be what AA people call the quote-unquote dry drunk. You're going to be miserable as hell, and you're not going to get what you need. Find out what you got. Spend the extra money and find out what the hell you got. You know, it will save you time. It'll save you money in the long run. It'll save you misery. Cannot underemphasize that. When people come into my office, I do a two-hour intake interview, not 45 minutes, not 30 minutes, not an hour, 2 hours. And I do at least an MMPI emotional test. I don't give a flip what they come in for. I want to know what the hell I'm dealing with. Because I find stuff out all the time these people had no clue they were suffering for. And you know what? It's not my patient's job to know that. It's my daggum job. And somebody who isn't doing their job, you don't want as your therapist. I don't care how much they gratify your narcissism, how much they go, coochie coo, aren't you cute? Love that hair, Drew. Oh my God, where'd you get those shoes? Have you lost weight? I don't care. Get somebody competent. Make damn sure somebody is competent to do what you need to do. Right. If you have something that requires medication, again, make sure that you go to somebody who knows their stuff. Don't just go to a general family practitioner or a general practitioner unless he or she's got expertise in that area, or an internal medicine person unless he or she's got expertise in that area. If you can manage it holistically, don't be afraid to consult a dietitian or a nutritional specialist or a holistic physician or whatever. Find somebody who knows what they're doing and see if you can manage it by diet and lifestyle, perhaps, or maybe combining so-called alternative medicine with more traditional Western medicine. But explore your options. Be proactive. All right? Do you have a family history of this disorder? That's real important to tell people. Do you have a history of other things that happened prior to this? So maybe you were an acting out bad boy or bad girl teenager, and now you're a middle-aged adult with a drinking problem. Well, it's important for your clinician to know that you got spent some time in juvie as a kid, or you had to go to an alternative school because you acted up, but, you know, whatever. I mean, be honest with folks. And that's the bottom line. If you can't be honest with your therapist, go find another therapist you can be honest with. Right? You've got to be able to feel okay with that. Therapists are not here to judge you. They're here to help you. But they can't help you if you lie to them, kind of like your lawyer. You don't lie to your lawyer, okay? Did you murder that guy? No. Well, maybe. Come on, people. Okay? So make sure you know what you're dealing with, right? be sure that you, if you know, they, oh, another place that you can ask friends. Ask other family members, right? Ask coworkers. Some of these people have had counseling. Particularly if you know somebody's had therapy before, had counseling before for an issue, or had a problem in their family, go ask them. Hey, I understand your sister had a daughter who had a drinking problem. How's that coming along? And who did they see? And did they like that person? And what, you know, if they tell you they hated them and they gave you their name, that's a start. Well, why? But, you know, find out why they hated him. Well, they hated him because he told me the truth. Well, duh. You know, but again, you know, not every therapist is right for everybody. Even if you find somebody who's got the greatest credentials on the planet, who knows his or her stuff, who does testing, who does their own testing, who is competent, who is careful, who will see you in the evening or at night or on the weekends or whatever, who knows their cookies, yada, 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 you got to feel good with them. And, you know, you got to be right for them. I tell everybody, even if you get the disorder, you know, even if you come into me because I'm the guy that sees a lot of addictions or I do this or I do that, and we're a good match on the disorder level and you got the money to pay for the out-of-network stuff and yada, 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 right? But for some reason, you just don't like me or you know, you're not ready to hear my bluntness is too blunt for you or whatever. Ask me to either tone it down if I can or ask me to recommend somebody that isn't quite as blunt as I am. I'm okay with that. I am not the therapist for everybody. I tell people that when they walk in the door, right? If you really don't want to hear the truth, as I can possibly see it, as much as any human can know the truth, with a capital T, and if you don't want to know what my tests say, and you don't want to fix your stuff, if you just want me to pat you on the ass and say, poor baby, and oh my God, and give you a lot of sympathy and let you whine, I'm sorry. I might recommend a good cheese for that whine, but I don't put up with whiners. I just don't. I feel real bad for folks if they've had really bad life histories, and certainly I have a lot of empathy and sympathy for them. But I tell everybody, you know, you need some time to whine, you need some time to barf it on the table, you need some time to process and to grieve. But after that, the party's over. Tell the partygoers to get the flip out and get off your butt and start doing that nasty four-letter word, right? Because it may not be your responsibility for what happened to you. And folks have heard me say this before. You know, if you're one of these rare people that has inborn endogenous clinical depression that you had biochemically because it runs in your family and you just happen to get a FUBAR-wired brain through no fault of your own, or you're one of these people that got born out of the chute with real bad ADHD or, like me, with this crappy sleep disorder or whatever, you know what? That's really not your responsibility. But it is your responsibility to manage it and to do the best you can with it and stop blaming God, your parents, society, your genes, what the fuck ever, because the reality is, whatever it is, you're going to have to deal with it, and that is your complete, total, and utter responsibility, right? It's not your responsibility if somebody physically or sexually abuses you or emotionally abuses you, but it is your responsibility to rise above it and figure out how you're going to cope with it and how to tell them to go kiss your royal patootie and live a great life in spite of it. That is your responsibility, and waiting for somebody else to change ain't gonna cut it. And waiting for life to treat you better ain't gonna cut it, right? And so if you're one of these people that wants me to tell you how horrible life is and how bad your parents were and how awful and terrible society is, I can tell you that for a couple of sessions. After that, I'm gonna go, dude, or honey, get off your butt and let's get going. That has to do with what? Other than you just want to whine? I'm sorry, you're not paying me to hear you whine. You're paying me to help you not whine. You're paying me to help you improve your life so you don't have to whine, so you can go woohoo and have a great, great, great life that everybody, in my personal opinion, everybody should be grabbing for themselves. Everybody should be having. Everybody should be going for the gusto, in my personal opinion. Everybody ought to be living the best life they can possibly live, whatever that is, to the fullest they can possibly live it, and that is my fantasy about every single person who walks into my office. Right? Now, does that always happen? Well, duh, no. But is that my goal? You bet your sweet bippy it is. I want everybody to kick life in the butt. I want everybody to be better than whoever it is that screwed with them in the past and rise above it so that they can stick their tongues out and tell those people, go pound sand. I've grown beyond your ass. Or I've managed my disorder the best I can, and this is what I'm doing despite what I've got. I tell everybody what I like to do is to change if-onlys into even those. So what I mean by that is I'll have people say, oh, if only my mom had been better, if only I hadn't been in the Iraqi war, if only I didn't have this crappy sleep disorder. I like to say to people, let's take those if-only phrases and change them into even though phrases. Even though I was physically abused as a kid, I can rise above it and make my life better now. Even though I have this crappy-ass sleep disorder, I'll get a job where I can sleep till 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon and show up at 3 in the afternoon and work till 11 or 12 or whatever the hell I have to work to get my job done, right? Changing if only into even though, because the only thing that living when if-onlys is going to do, or as a line from a famous movie, I could have been a contender, is going to do, is going to hold you back. And after a while, people have a lot of sympathy and empathy for folks early on, and after a while, it's like, oh my God, here this chick comes again, or here this guy comes again, and all they're doing is bitch and whining and moaning. I'm going to be busy. I'm not going to dinner. I'm sick of that shit. And I can personally tell you, I don't have any patience for that stuff in my private life. I definitely don't have any patience for it with my patients, except in the early stages. And again, while I have tons of empathy and tons of sympathy and compassion for folks, I want folks at some point to get off their posterior and do that nasty four-letter word work and grab life by the testicles or by whatever they can grab it by and do the best damn squeeze them till they get every juice out of life they can possibly get, because I want people to live, and I mean really live life. Existing is easy. Living is hard. Take my word for it. It is really flipping hard. And particularly if you have one or two or three disorders you've had chronic, it's hard. And I know it's hard, and I really feel bad for folks that have issues, and I'm the first person to empathize with them. But the reality is, if you don't take it by the yin-yang, it's not going to get better. So do your homework. Call your providers. Talk to your insurance company. Talk to state organizations. Talk to friends, colleagues, family members, church, you know, your pastor at your church. Talk to your physician. Many physicians have psychology people or psychiatry people or therapists they refer to, right? Talk to your karate, you know, professor or your high school basketball coach or whatever the heck, you know, your kid's teacher or your art teacher or whatever the heck it is. Find somebody. Don't stop in your quest to be the best you can be, because most disorders are manageable. Some disorders are curable, and most are manageable. They're not always fun, but they are manageable, and most are rise aboveable. And I know that's not a real word, but you guys and gals know what I'm talking about, okay? So find somebody that works for you. Find somebody with the proper credentials, with the proper experience. And if you have to pay a little bit more, if you can afford it, and you have to pay a little bit more to get the best, get the best. Don't settle. This is your life. Never settle for half-ass, either from yourself or from anybody else in your life. I want everybody to grab it and go with it as much as they possibly can to live the best life they were meant to live. Because that, to me, is what living is all about. It's not about existing. It's about living and growing and having fun. And yeah, you got to do some work along the way. Oh, my God, there's that word again. I wish he'd quit saying that. Yeah, I know, guys and gals, but, you know, I'm just telling you the way it is, and I'm sorry. I'm not God. I'm just reporting reality, okay? And by the way, medication doesn't cure anything. It just keeps stuff at bay. So if you think you're going to cure anything by taking meds, that ain't going to work. That's the other problem I see people do, is they get popped up on meds. Well, my kid's on Ritalin. He's got ADHD, and he's on Ritalin. Yeah, is he learning how to do abstract thinking? What? Is he learning how to do impulse control management or task management or time management or money management or how to study or how to listen or how to not be distracted, yada, yada? Well, oh, he's on medication. Well, I'm sorry, the medication isn't doing any of that shit. All the medication does is rectify brain chemistry long enough for a person to get a clue that they're not getting a clue. And that's true of depression medication. That's true of psychotic medication. That's true of almost any medication. Medication doesn't solve anything. It just makes the brain able to learn stuff that it needs to learn, and now you've got to teach it, right? So don't give me this crap about, oh, my meds. Well, you're not dealing with the reality. You're trying to put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, you know. So make sure you're an informed consumer. Make sure that you're getting the best you can possibly get, and never stop until you find that person or persons. And sometimes you need two or three people. Sometimes you need a physician for the meds. You need a therapist for the therapy. Sometimes you need a therapist and a psychoeducational specialist to help you learn, your brain to learn better. I mean, do whatever it takes. This is your life. Take responsibility for it, grab it, get all the gusto out of it you can get. Okay, guys and gals, thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. I appreciate you listening, and the podcast will be coming forth in another couple of weeks, and hopefully my online services will be up in a couple of weeks as well. It's looking like it's almost here, so stay tuned. Thank you very much. Have a good one.